Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. My name is Jeff Hayward and I'm here with my co-host, Susie Rumbold, past president of the British Institute of Interior Design and creative director of Tessuto Interiors, in front of a live audience of designers at DecorEx 2024. And today I'm delighted to say that we will be discussing the fine art of display.
Everyone has had the experience of packing up a home, removing the pictures and personal objects, and realizing with a shock that suddenly the space is no longer theirs. Functional interior spaces that meet our practical needs are essential, but it seems it is the art and objects that we use to personalize those spaces that give them their heart and soul. We instinctively know that art in all its glorious forms provides emotional context that can make a person feel comfortable or not comfortable within a space. But in recognizing the power of art to transform and complete an interior, how should designers go about preparing their buildings and their clients to best showcase these important elements? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Now, to help us explore this topic, we're joined by renowned interior designer Sophie Patterson and well-known artist and international curator, Stephanie Nebbier. Welcome both to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sophie and Stephanie, before we begin, could you perhaps just give us each a brief introduction to yourself and what you do? Sophie, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'm Sophie Patterson, founder of Sophie Patterson Interiors. I founded my design company 16 years ago, and we work on high-end residential projects all over the world. We really strive to create homes that don't just look good in pictures, but also feel good to live in.
I'm Stephanie Nebbier. I'm an artist and a curator of private collections. I'm also deputy director of hands-on art workshops, which we run a program in Kakuma Refugee Camp, Kenya.
Fantastic. Amazing. First question then, Sophie, do you think it is essential for all interiors to contain art?
Definitely. For me, a home isn't complete without art. I always think when we take on a project, I like to know from the very beginning how important art is to a client. And if they tell me it's not important, I feel it's part of my job to show them how important it is. I think it not only makes the interiors feel finished and it adds interest and personality to your interior, but I think plain walls for me just feel sad in a home. So I think even if you don't have art from the very beginning, it's something that you should pay a lot of attention to. Try and find out what pieces of art you like and add them into your home.
Well, despite being an artist, I would also argue no, depending on the kind of interior. Certainly this is a nod to architects who have created beautiful spaces and really curated cupboards and really played a sort of homage to the materials. So on one hand, I would say not necessarily, but that would be because of the building. But certainly a space is invigorated and personalized, just as Sophie describes, by a collection, whether it's one through intuition and sentiment or one through dedicated serious collecting.
And Sophie, what does or can a client's art collection say about them as a person?
Our clients have very varied art tastes, and like I said earlier, that's something I like to establish early on. I think when an art collection is good and it's personalized and they've been involved in the process, it tells you a lot about their personality, their interests. I think when it isn't good is when an interior designer just takes complete control and it's just very sort of bland and doesn't make any statements. So ideally, the client will have an interest in art and they'll sort of develop that as the project continues.
And Steph, what else do you think it...
I agree. I think actually it's quite interesting when you have the meeting with the collector to really bring to their attention some of the formalities that they've been attracted to that they weren't perhaps aware of. And then that informs them in other decisions they might make, and also an opportunity to introduce them to other work that you realise they might find a connection with.
And it sounds to me, Sophie, like it's pretty much one of the first conversations you're having with a client when you're talking through the brief. You're finding out about what their art taste or what their collection is like.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much that we run through. I think we've got about a 10-page briefing document, so they kind of lose the will halfway through. But that is a really important conversation to have, because if they have a big art collection, it's important for us to know that from the very beginning. And I ask to see photographs of it, because we like to build the whole scheme around it. You don't necessarily need to have matching colours. But for me personally, I don't like to design an interior without knowing what the art is going to be or have a good idea of what it's going to look like. So it's a really key part of that initial briefing conversation.
And there are problems, Stephanie, I'd imagine, if the designer is called in late or the curator's called in late to a project where the art conversation's already happened.
Yes, because obviously as a curator and a collector, you are the caretaker of your objects and your collection. And so the considerations of making sure that the work is put in the right environment is quite critical. So certainly it's really helpful when a designer has been involved in that conversation early on and with a curator to make sure that you continue to caretake the collection.
Yeah, and I suppose the clients will have things that they already own and then things perhaps that they will acquire through the course of the project. In your detailed briefing document, Sophie, do you have a way of actually teasing out with the client how important each of the pieces that they already own are to them?
That is a really good question. I think it's something that happens naturally. I think if a particular piece is really important to them, they'll bring it up in conversation quite early on. I don't go through the sort of formal process of saying, how important is this one to you? How important is that one? But naturally, you'll know by how much they talk about it, or if it's a particularly well-known artist, you kind of want to put the pieces that are more valuable and more sort of important to that client in the key areas. So I would never suggest, you know, something that was really special to just go in a corridor where it's going to be forgotten about. We try and put it in the right places.
And you talk about convincing clients that they should have art. How easy is that conversation for you?
I think, truthfully, it comes down to budget. If someone doesn't care about art, I'm never going to convince them to spend a lot of money on art, and that's, I wouldn't want to do that. It's up to them. But I will try and sort of find the art that works for them. So even if they don't care about art, I'll show them, I've got project installation photos, and this is quite helpful if any of you are interior designers and you want to convince gently your clients to take on the accessories and the art. If you're doing a mid-install, take a photo of that room with just the furniture and then show them the end result with the accessories and the art, and that kind of says everything you need to say. And then once hopefully they'll see the value of that, you can find them more affordable pieces. You know, I think there's a space for really special pieces of art, but we also have a lot of sort of wall filler art. I know that's probably really offensive to you, but I think not every piece has to be a statement piece of art, in the same way that furniture, not every piece of furniture, not every fabric is going to be a piece of statement. It's just sometimes there to fill a space and sort of ease your eyes. You look around the room and then the focal will be on the main special piece, maybe above the fireplace. It will be lit specially. But the other pieces still have a place in interior design as far as I'm concerned.
And then once you've taken that brief and you've kind of had that broad brush conversation about the client's existing collection, is there a way that you go about handling their existing pieces in terms of recording it and stuff? What do you do?
I mean, I don't know how geeky and boring you want me to get.
I know,
but
as geeky as you like.
Okay. Well, we use Dropbox for storing all the information, and we also use Estimac. So then we'll take that photo, we'll put it into Dropbox straight away. We'll put it into our presentation that we use in InDesign. And that's just quite a good reminder so that it's staying, you know, at the forefront as we're picking fabrics, as we're picking furniture. We're mindful of what the pieces of art that we're wanting to use in that scheme are. And again, it depends on the importance of art to that client. We've had clients that have got really incredible art collections, and then they'll have their own curator, they'll have specialist warehousing, they'll have, you know, a PDF that they give to us, and it's like almost a museum list. And then we have other people that have literally got something in their garage, and we sort of rummage through, find it, and take a photo of on our iPhone. So it's kind of horses for courses, but we try and sort of bear that in mind from the beginning.
And as a curator, Stephanie, how do you approach a client who's got an existing art collection?
Well, to go back to one of the points that Sophie made, I always ask the question, do you have a piece or pieces that are particularly important to you that you would really like to have in a specific space? And I'm always, the response is no. However, the minute you start talking to them in depth about their collection, you'll suddenly be met with, oh, I'd really like to have this one in this room, and actually I really want this one in my bedroom. So I always ask that question knowing that as you continue the conversation, you will be enlightened and given an insight into things that are more special to them and why sometimes that's important to them, not just because it's valuable, but because it will have an association. So it's important to sort of identify in their collection things that they've either inherited or that they've collected that has a significance, as well as recognizing the pieces that are valuable and need to be really well preserved.
Maybe things they've bought when they've been traveling, or, you know, anniversary presents, things they've given each other, for example.
It's a whole mixture of things.
And do you find that sometimes clients want to rush through that rather than allow you to dig deep into their lives? I mean, how long does the process take?
Well, because you get the no answer first of all, that bit's quite quick. And then as soon as you start to sort of think about, I always have more than one plan, because I know at some point you're going to be met with, I'm not sure I want that there. And that's when the conversation becomes more involved. So I'm always prepared for the two-tiered conversation and plan A, B, C, and D, so that you can be really agile and respond, because often, this is the first chance they've really had to reflect on their collection. So you want to really allow them the opportunity to perhaps stop and consider, because they think it's a fait accompli when you turn up and it's just a hang, but it's not.
Feels like it's therapeutic, Sophie.
Not for Sophie.
Well, it's a big responsibility. I'm thinking about a project that we did, and sadly we can't share photos of this one, but it was one of the first times I'd worked with a curator. And it was really interesting what you were saying there, because we had a plan. We'd done 2D elevations of all the interiors. We knew what was going where. And when it came to actually installing the art, luckily, we knew this client wanted to be very involved in the process. We didn't hang a single piece without her being there. And suddenly she felt different once she was in that space. And that really taught me a lot, that as interior designers, maybe at the end of our install, we might just want to rush, get the art up so we can take the photos, we're done. But actually, this is someone's home, and you need to give them that space and that time to really reflect on how do they feel about it, because they're going to be living with this piece. And it took a long time, and it was stressful, because you kind of want to plan, you want to know what you're doing, and then it's a bit like playing Tetris. I remember we managed to find amazing spaces for all the pieces, but then there was the one piece that was so special, and their curator had worked really hard to be able to secure this piece, my client. And we just didn't know where it was going to go. And you learn through experience. And actually, I have to say, I did suggest it went in a hallway, because we just didn't have a wall big enough. Mm. It was meant to go above a sofa, but there was paneling, and it just looked awkward above the sofa. So we had to just sort of leave it a couple of days. We all reflected on it before we hung anything. And then finally, on the last day, we were walking past the staircase, and they had this really big wall, and we didn't have anything there. And it was the perfect spot, because you could sort of see it in the center of the house. They get to appreciate it every time they're walking up the stairs. They get to see it from different angles. And what that really taught me was that you shouldn't rush this process. Take your time, as tempting as it is to just get stuff on the wall, give it a bit of time, and then maybe what your plan was will end up being better because you go through that process.
Yeah. And Stephanie, just as an opportunity to blow your own trumpet, what would you say are the main benefits of actually working with someone like you as a curator for a private client's collection?
I think because you are always prepared for that dialogue, because that's the nature of hanging any collection of works, whether for private collections or public exhibitions. You're always looking for those dialogues, and certainly the opportunity to engage with the pieces. So when you mentioned about the hallway, I really identify with that, because actually it gives you a really good opportunity to do some of the most interesting hangs, because you don't have to be so formal. So you can do some really amazing collections of things. So often the least expected spaces can provide the best opportunities. Mm. So I really connected with what you were saying about the hallway is a useful space.
A big wall.
Yeah.
And Sophie, what do you do if you really don't think the client's art is right for the interior?
That is a good question. Well, you kind of have to assess it on a case-by-case basis. If you have a really good relationship with your client, I think it's important to be honest, but you need to be honest and gentle at the same time. So I would never just boldly go in and say, oh, I don't like this piece. I would maybe look at different locations that I could put it. I would look at perhaps the framing. Reframing a piece can totally transform it. If you feel like the colors don't work, you could maybe minimize those colors by doing a really chunky linen mount. I love a big mount. I think that really sort of transforms a piece. But ultimately, I always say to the client, it's your decision, it's your house. It's my job to tell you what I think will work, and then it's your decision at the end of the day of what you want to do. So just tread carefully. I think people can be very sensitive about their possessions, especially if it's something that means a lot to them. You don't want to offend them.
How do you find that, Stephanie, as a curator?
Framing is everything. It's the preservation of your work, and it also brings to life and creates opportunities to offer those dialogues between the works. So framing, absolutely, as Sophie says, and really not taking the potential of a mount for granted, you know, optimizing the potential of integrating color or tone or tint and scale. You can really transform the whole collection in that way. And I have been doorstepped many times on arrival by architects and designers saying, you've really got to get rid of that piece. It's an absolute nightmare. It's a complete monster. You know, bury it, bury it. And of course, you have a commitment to the client that they may really cherish this piece for whatever reason. So it's recognizing that actually it's not really connecting with the vision, but looking at resourceful ways of housing pieces and reframing them and creating an opportunity so that they do work.
I always think that I've worked with you in the past quite a few times, and it's like one of the dark arts what you do. You can take a client's mediocre suburban art collection, and just by rejigging it and repositioning it, you can make it look museum quality. It's amazing.
I have a good frame for that help.
So Stephanie, what do you think should be the main considerations when planning art hangs?
Always the preservation and the conservation. So you want to think about really practical, very obvious things about making sure that existing frames, if the client doesn't want them to be reframed, that they really are protecting from the back. You're really ensuring that there's no danger of dust, etc. Thinking about the lighting, and because obviously paintings really react to temperature and light. So it's always going to be about the positioning and the preservation of the piece, and thinking about the light and the effect that that might have on the work and the temperature of the environment that it's in.
And what about colour temperature too? The colour temperature of the light source?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is a really, really important one. In fact, there are some amazing advancements in lighting where you can really adjust not only the direction and the spot of your lighting, but the temperature, so you can have a cooler light or a warmer light. Because at the end of the day, if it's somebody's home, it needs to feel ambient and it needs to feel comfortable. But at the same time, you've got to balance that with making sure that you're not exposing the work so that it's going to deteriorate. I mean, I don't want to go down a path of inner geek on pigments and dyes, but anything that's dye-based or laked pigments will fade. So you need to be really aware of how old is this piece? Is it likely to be a pigment or a laked dye? Is it quite historic? If it is, then it's going to be really vulnerable to any natural light. So this is where the hallway is really useful, but also you need to think about the kind of lighting you're going to use and also any heat that the lighting will provide.
I mean, the process feels like it's so overwhelming when you start a project, working out just what is going to go where. Do you have a scientific process for doing that?
I wish there was a formula. No, everything happens organically, and it depends on how important it is to the client. It depends on the priorities. It's an important part of the briefing process, but from our perspective, we just dive straight into the interior architecture. So we're aware before we get to the FF&E side, we're aware before we do all the colour schemes of the art collection. We know the sizes. So for example, if you're designing panelling, you want to be mindful to not make the panels too narrow for that piece. You also want to be mindful of the heights of sofas. So it's good to know about it, but there's so much before you have to get to there, and I think you just need to have a really sort of concise process and just take it step by step, because I think if you do think about everything, every single decision you need to make on a project, you would be overwhelmed and you would be really stressed. But when you take it step by step and you know the right order in which to do things, it kind of just all flows naturally.
You agree with that, Stephanie? Do you have a process when you're looking at a client's collection?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you have to think about the furniture and the living space, because you want to make sure that the work is not going to be vulnerable in any way. And in more complex projects, you know, bringing in the expertise of everybody, because otherwise it is overwhelming. And certainly thinking about always the safety of the pieces, but the ease in which somebody can live in that space with their collection.
And what are the sorts of hangs that curators use? Are there different types of styles of displays that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, it's always down to the work dictates that and the space. And certainly there are trends in interiors like there is in anything, and so you do respond to palettes and textures that you would find that are more current, that might alter the way in which you hang something. And there are certainly considerations about what kind of fixtures and fittings you use in order to install the works. And that's when I really recommend always using an expert hanger, not just somebody who bangs a nail in. You really do want somebody who knows how to install art, because then they will also understand the surfaces and the design of the interiors that they're working with. And that makes a huge difference. And, you know, using the right cord so it's not nylon, it's not going to hang, and it's not going to perish because it's wire. I mean, being really informed about the install is really important. And working with a really good hanger is an invaluable partnership.
Well, and I suppose, too, just thinking about it, unless the correct fixings are used, if something falls onto the floor and is smashed,
That's
not going to please your clients.
No.
And also it will damage the work. And that's why it's really important that, you know, you work with a hanger who really understands the kind of cord that you would need, or if you're going to use a batten, but that's going to have a much bigger impact on the wall surface. And that's when an expert framer as well, not just a high street, but somebody who really understands the work and what it's for and how it's going to be installed. My framer and my hanger are my two best friends.
Is it the same for you, Sophie?
Well, I think I have a different perspective. I think there can be, in interior design and the art world, a real sort of, I don't want to say it, but a bit of snobbery. And I think it makes people feel like it's not accessible to them. So I think there's levels. Obviously, if you've got an art curator, you're expecting that level of expertise, but not every project or home warrants that. So I'd say don't feel bad if you don't have an expert hanger, if you don't have all that area of expertise around you. Art is for everyone, and I don't think you need to just put paintings on your wall. You know, some of my favorite installations we've done have been putting plates on the wall, and I think it's just about being creative and using art in different ways. You know, we talked about framing and mounts. You know, my kids make art constantly, and one of the things that I really want to develop, because I haven't seen it, is I want to make a frame that you can put on the wall that's got a really nice linen mount, and you can just open it at the back and then keep putting your kids' art in there. Because I think the way you display things is so important. You know, if you put enough pieces in repetition, it can look really luxurious, it can look really stylish. So, you know, don't be scared. Obviously, if you've got really high-end clients and that level of expertise is required, then do use it if you've got the budget, but don't feel that you can't do it on a more affordable budget.
And if the client doesn't have the right piece for a key location, presumably you're managing a conversation to say, well, you need to acquire something.
Yeah, and something that we quite like to do with clients is commission art, because with all the will in the world, we love going to art fairs and sourcing art, but a lot of our clients don't necessarily want to bring on an art curator. They want us to take the lead on that. And it's really hard to find the right piece, especially under time pressure. So then that's when I like to go to my little black book of artists that we work with. And I think if you are going to commission a piece of art, it's really important to give them creative freedom. And it's quite a scary process to do that. But if you think about it, if you're an interior designer and your client really tightly controls what you can do, sort of is watching you over the shoulder, you don't do your best work. And that applies to artists as well. So when I commission an artist, I'll send them the design scheme, I'll send them physical samples of the colors, I'll give them an idea of the kind of art that the client likes. And then I say, please, can you like come up with a concept? And then we're just going to leave you to it. And I also educate the client on that this is not painting by numbers. You know, we've got a good relationship with these artists. So if it comes back and the client really hates it, then we're lucky that we can work with the artists, maybe tweak it. But generally, I think it's good just to give people the opportunity to do what they do and not sort of control that too tightly.
And Stephanie, I know you also commission works of art sometimes for clients, on behalf of clients. Is your approach the same?
It's slightly different, probably because, as Sophie pointed out quite rightly, there are different contexts of curation. And so there is the very precious collectible art collection, and there's also the things that you've acquired and inherited that wouldn't warrant, you know, bespoke expertise. And then, of course, there's the gallery environment. And because I move between all of those contexts, and because I'm an artist, it's actually really nice opportunity to introduce other artists to a client. When I see a piece of work in a collection and it prompts, perhaps they might be interested in this artist or this artist. And because I have a lot of access to lots of different artists and different kinds of work, it's an opportunity for me to introduce them to, you know, possible artists that they might enjoy and find that they want to add to their collection.
How important are sight lines when you're displaying art and objects?
Very briefly for us, I think they're really important. You know, when we're positioning art, same as when you're positioning your furniture, you know, if I'm looking at an armchair and it's the first thing you see as you walk into that room, I want to do a nice decorative fabric on the back because it's all about those first impressions. And it's the same with art. If you walk in and the wall that you see is the main wall, then that warrants to have the most special piece of art and maybe have a very narrow beam light on it. So I think that's very important. But you've also got to think about where you're sitting, where are you going to enjoy the piece of art. You know, hallways are great because you walk past them, but some pieces of art are more sort of contemplative. And then in that case, I like to put it somewhere where you can sit on a sofa and you can see it from that sofa and really enjoy it whilst you're feeling comfortable.
Yeah, I do enjoy finding that sort of central line when I'm doing a hang of big and small pieces. I get quite excited about creating that sight line that can run between, you know, really
so
different
things,
scales.
Things are sort of on the same level, or there's a midline
not,
that runs.
Yeah, midline, always a midline, not lining it at the top, but always finding that sort of opportunity. But then that is determined very much by how low the ceiling is and, of course, furniture. So it's not an exact science, but I certainly always start with that midline, because then if you're trying to sort of develop the dialogues between the pieces, the reasons why you've encouraged or suggested certain things could be hung together that aren't obvious because you're not doing it by colour, you might be doing it through context or texture or any kind of formality that you would look for in a piece of work, that's a really nice way in which to bring that to life together.
And viewing distances must also be important.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you look at the TV and you're too close. If you're really up close to a big piece, you can't really appreciate it. So if a room is very narrow, or like you're looking at a narrow hallway, we tend to do much smaller framed pieces. If you've got a narrow hallway that's very dark, I tend to like doing pieces with a glass piece in front, because it kind of bounces the light. I don't like too bolder pieces. Some frames are particularly chunky, so I try and avoid those in smaller rooms. Yeah, it's definitely an important consideration.
Big consideration for the curator too.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you want people to enjoy the work, and so it needs to be put in a situation where, and a place where, you can actually get back from if it's needed, or give opportunities to get close to something. You know, if you've got a beautiful Japanese woodcut, you actually want to be able to engage with it at a much closer distance.
Yeah, definitely. And what would you say is the best, we've kind of touched on this, but just to dive a bit deeper, what is the best approach for the display of art in corridors and on staircases?
I like repetition on staircases. I don't like to have lots of different sizes. I like a sort of sense of order. I quite like a gallery wall in a staircase, again, because you have a big space to play with. I either go large scale or lots of items repeated.
And just to define for the audience, what do you mean when you say a gallery wall? What does that look like?
Oh, gallery wall is when you have like multiple pieces of art all kind of like put together. They don't have to be the same piece, but you might have like a scattering of different style of some paintings, some drawings, all different types of art, and they kind of group together quite nicely.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's a really good opportunity to put collections together, collections of prints, and be able to sort of create that really nice linear narrative of smaller, intimate pieces. And certainly it's a great opportunity when you're trying to house things that perhaps don't quite fit in any major spaces. You can then do some quite interesting hangs that are a little bit unconventional and a bit informal. If you've got the right kind of space in a corridor, you can sort of take those kind of opportunities. I don't want to use the word risk, but it is a sort of testing ground to see if it's going to work.
And Sophie, how do you work with lighting designers? Because that's so important to get right too.
Really important. I work pretty much mostly with John Cullen. When we engage a client at the beginning, I always ask them again how important lighting is. We do undertake lighting in-house. And I'm very honest, I always say, if you like lighting, we'll give you a solid 8, 9 out of 10. If you really, really care about lighting, go with someone like John Cullen, they'll give you a 10 out of 10. I think it's so important, and there's so much to it. It's not just about the positions on the ceiling, and I think by now we all know not to do a grid layout. But it's the width of the beams, it's the angles. They even have things like honeycomb. So say if you have a spotlight here, they're glaring in your face and you want to have them in that position because maybe you've got a beautiful piece of art, but you don't want to sit there with a spotlight on your face. They can put things that are, they call it a honeycomb, and it kind of diffuses the light a little bit so it's not so glaring. I'm always blown away by the level of expertise they bring, and I can see a real difference in our projects when you've got that specialist lighting designer and when it's just been done in-house by an interior designer. It really adds a lot of value.
And of course, Stephanie, it can be careless lighting design can ruin the art, can't it?
Yeah, it's certainly, we mentioned before, it's one of those things that can really help with the preservation of really important, valuable works of art. And certainly if you're dealing with valuable works of art that need to be preserved, conserved, and you have the budget for that, then it's absolutely something I would always recommend expertise, because it can be so damaging if you are not thinking carefully about the lighting and the piece that is being exposed.
And do you think it's essential that art is always displayed on a neutral background, Steph?
No, I don't. I don't. And actually, if you look at some of the more sort of historic museums, you can see wonderful examples of when it's not. It depends on the work. It depends on the frame and it depends on the decor. So, you know, absolutely, if you're thinking about creating a context between the materials, the surface, the palette and the piece, it can be fantastic. When it's not considered and it's not intended, it can be disastrous. So it has to be intended and understood so that you're making informed decisions. But I really enjoy seeing some really unconventional and interesting examples of where you're really thinking about your interior and its relationship to the work that's being shown. And some of the best museums in the world have really shown us that.
Yeah. And do you work with art, for example, on pattern surfaces?
Great question. I love this. I, like you said, I prefer really bold pieces where they're kind of the statement in the room to be on a more neutral, plain background. But we do a lot of chinoiserie wallpaper, and this was a challenge that we were really coming up with, where the wallpaper is almost the star of the show. And then it was hard to find art that would go on it, so I would use like decorative Rococo mirrors, maybe some black and white charcoal drawings, but it was very limited, and I like to layer up the room, so I don't want to be scared to put things on wallpaper. So we've actually just launched an art collection with Fremantle, and the key of what made that art work on chinoiserie wallpaper or any kind of bold wallpaper is the framing. So we've got a really chunky oak frame, and then we have a really extra wide mount, and then the art itself is kept quite subdued. It's a very neutral palette. It's more abstract, not such bold colours, and that gets the balance right for me. I feel like that's a much more usable piece on something like a chinoiserie wallpaper.
Now, as well as lighting, there are other factors that can affect a collection. What do you do? How do you prepare to keep collections safe? What are the factors you consider?
I am not an expert, but I do simple things. Like if you're going to put a piece of art in a bathroom, you know, don't put something that's very delicate in a bathroom. Or if you do, speak to your framer to see what they can do to make it as watertight as possible. Generally, things that are exposed to sunlight, again, I'm very mindful not to put expensive pieces, you know, in a south-facing room opposite the window. It's just more common sense. I wouldn't say that I go to the lengths that you would go to, but it's more just being mindful about what are these pieces, you know, what are they made of, what is going to make them damaged over time.
Stephanie, what would you add to...
Yeah, I mean, it's really thinking about how old the piece is, because then that will tell you what kind of considerations you need to add to all of the things that Sophie's mentioned. I mentioned earlier about pigments and dyes, and some things are likely to fade quite drastically, so you need to be so careful about the glazing that's used. So one of the things I always check is the framing, which I mentioned before, is completely sealed on the back, but also what kind of glazing has been used if you've got things like watercolour, and thinking about the robustness of the kinds of...
So this is glass that will stop ultraviolet light.
Yeah,
got it.
Which is more affordable than it used to be. So it's definitely worth taking out a piece of glass and just changing the glazing, because it's far more affordable than it ever used to be to have museum glass and UV protected
glass. And then I suppose at that point you can hang it in a sunny room. Whereas you,
I wouldn't do that anyway. I still wouldn't do that anyway. Even if a work is varnished and cleaned and varnished with UV protection varnish, I still wouldn't take that risk.
We've talked up to now about stuff on walls. What do we need to consider if we're planning and displaying sculpture? Do you ever get involved in sculpture?
I love sculpture. Well, I think it's important to have varied types of all kinds of art. You know, I think for me, if I go into an interior and everything is oil paintings, it's quite boring. So I like to mix it up when I'm sort of putting an art collection together for a client. We'll try and get a mix of sculpture, ceramic pieces, paintings, watercolors, sketches. And I think there's a place for everything. One thing that I'm very mindful of with sculpture is the location of it and how it's displayed. So if we're working with a client that has a young family, the last thing you want to do is have loads of sculptures on plinths that are vulnerable to kids running around. But if you have maybe like a more formal area that's not going to get so much bashing, I think it's an amazing opportunity. We've done some really beautiful sculptures. And again, I think with sculpture, it's almost, you could almost put anything on a plinth. And if you light it the right way, it looks like an amazing piece of art. So I think it's such a good opportunity to maybe have some of your vases. Again, if we're talking about a lower budget, you can get some beautifully cut glass vases. And then when you put them on a plinth, suddenly they feel like a piece of art rather than just a vase that belongs in a cupboard. So I absolutely love sculpture. And I think just think about how you're going to display it and put it on a beautiful plinth.
Any other tips?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the size of the sculptures as well. I've had some collectors who have had some really interesting objects, and there's the danger of things looking a bit cluttered or for them to just be shoved in a box and forgotten about. So examples like Damien Hirst's pharmacy or Edmund Duval's cabinets offer really good ways, problem-solving opportunities to put beautiful objects in really beautiful display cabinets that protects them, obviously, but also consolidates them so you don't have lots of small objects, but create actually quite a nice installation.
Minimise on dusting as well.
Totally.
What about smaller pieces? You talked about ceramics. What about clients who may have miniatures or etchings or, I don't know, smaller collections that they've got?
That's a good question. Actually, I was thinking about this when you were saying that. We like to mix up, so whether it's small sculptures or smaller pieces, sometimes if you've got a lot of shelving, I might intermix with the books some pieces of art. Again, I think it's a nice, interesting way to do it. I don't like to have shelves full of books because I think it can look quite messy. So we might put small sculptures there or vases, or something that I really like to do at the moment is if you have a small or medium-sized painting, I like hanging it from chains in front of the shelves. And I think putting art in unexpected places, like I've got some really small oil paintings, and I actually have them in my utility room, which seems like such a crazy place to put them. But I actually spend a lot of time in my utility room, and I think sometimes you put art in unexpected places, you appreciate it more. My husband's over there, I think he thought I was crazy. I came back with this amazing oil painting from Boston, and he's like, "Ooh, where's it going to go?" I was like, the utility room. But actually, he's told me he loves looking at it every time you load the washing machine, every time you're sort of in there doing some jobs. It's just that real sort of luxury moment where you get to appreciate something beautiful.
That's brilliant.
Interesting.
So that kind of leads us to our final question. What is the most unique, inspirational artwork you have ever installed, and what impact did it have on the finished project and the client? Stephanie?
Oh, so I've been really lucky that I've had some really lovely moments where I've gotten up close to an Albers and looked on the notes at the back or a beautiful Japanese woodcut. And so I've had those moments of delight. And I think most of the project, also if it's something that somebody's cherished, it's really hard to say just one particular experience or collection. But I did have one hang where that was really memorable because I had 10 artists whose work I had to hang, and it was when the Griffin Art Prize was running, and it was the first one. And the judges were Ian Davenport, Deborah Orr, and Xavier Ellis, amazing artists, critics, and curators. And being given the brief that I was going to have a short list of 10 artists to hang a show and curate, following these three great giants in British art, was quite daunting, but it was an absolute pleasure because the Griffin space was beautiful. The things that they'd selected, how they did their Venn diagram between the three of them, goodness only knows, but it worked beautifully. And being able to put a tiny, intense, intimate Lindsay Bull next to a great big John Robinson was pretty exciting, with Bea Haynes bellowing over on that wall. There was no conflict between the hang at all, and they were such diverse artists that had been selected. So it was the whole hang, not just one piece, just one for me.
And a highlight for you, Sophie?
Oh, I was racking my brain when you were saying your answer. It's hard to pick just one, but I think if I was to pick one, I think it's more about the emotion. I think sometimes when you've got a challenging piece of art and you manage to find a location for it, that's really great. I think it's more about the client's reactions. Maybe it's more about their personal pieces. I've had clients that have had family portraits, and this particular family, they hadn't lived in the apartment for a long time. It belonged to their late father, and it was a portrait of their father that we'd put in the entrance hall. And installs and handovers can be very emotional, because you're sort of handing over their finished home. It doesn't happen every time, but the dream is you hand over their finished home. Everything's lit perfectly. The candles are lit. And they walked into the entrance hall, they saw the portrait of their dad, and they burst into tears. And for me, not just because of the art, but that one just really stands out as just such a satisfying moment that you've sort of made their home feel like a home again.
Wonderful story. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sophie and Stephanie. I'm sure the audience will agree that that was just the most inspirational and informative talk. So thank you for your time today. It was a really fascinating conversation.
And thanks also to Decorex for hosting us here today at Olympia. And a final thank you to you, our audience. We do hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please get in touch with IDB on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod to share any feedback. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production. Thank you.